Well, it's that time of year again. It's time to talk the City Golf Tournament here in Bloomington. And my great friend joining us this afternoon, Chris Williams, who sits on the board, who handles the Hall of Fame and puts all these wonderful events, the scramble we had back in May and the City Tournament here in June and July. What's happening, my man? Good to hear your voice again.
Likewise, my friend. Everything's good.
We missed you last month because you were out of town. I was out of town. But as they say, the show must go on. And Cascades, the international course, has had some changes. We'll get into those in the management and the running of the place. But the course stays the same. And the 95th, do I have that right? 95th Bloomington City Golf Tournament. All the qualifying rounds are in the books, and we know what's happening. 95? Is that? Do I have that right?
Yeah, we're at 95, so we're kind of creeping towards the big one that we're hoping will be a grand show, the 100th. But we're obviously staying in the moment here, and we got a good tournament getting started tomorrow.
The 95th edition of the Bloomington City Golf Tournament. Qualifying was last weekend, and I was out of town. You were out of town, but I guess we missed any weather that was around, so that's great. And once we get everybody on the course and tee it high and let it fly, the qualifying's important because that sets the stage for match play, so it is a double-pronged style of golf tournament.
Yeah, so we had our championship flight qualifier was the last weekend in June, and then all non-championship flights had until the 2nd of July to get their scores in. So we had 125 total signed up this year, so the number's a little bit of an increase from last year. Anything that goes up in numbers in this case is good. So opening weekend starts tomorrow, so tomorrow's kind of like the kickoff weekend where we'll have the three main championship flights, which is the men's, which is named after the great champion Phil Talbot. Then we have the senior championship, which is named after Paul Gray, another longstanding name and fixture in the tournament, who is also in the Hall of Fame. And then we have the super senior championship as well. And then we will have all of the senior division flights take place tomorrow. And then on Sunday, obviously, the winners of those initial matches tomorrow will play, and then we will have all the regular men's flights commencing on Sunday.
So the qualification process, everybody that was not in a championship flight had to just post a couple of rounds. They're flighted in different divisions, but we know we're always paying attention to what's happening. I don't want to dismiss any of this. 125 people going out there, signing for a score, playing for a title is very cool. But the men's championship flight gets all of the attention. How did qualifying go? Were there any major surprises? And our defending champion, did he have to go through all that as well?
So our defending champion, Jason Bannister, who currently plays at University of Southern Indiana, he is back in the field. I believe he played one round, but it's not required for the defending champion to play, but sometimes they like to play just to kind of get a feel for the competition. So he's obviously back as defending champion. Our medalist was his, obviously, teammate at USI and a former Bloomington North product, Jace Day, who actually came out firing with a 65 on the first day and was just a few strokes off Mike Martin's qualifying record of 131, which was set way back in, I think it's 30 years ago now, 1993. It's amazing to think
we're getting
about
older.
That record's held. Yes, exactly. But we have a lot of familiar faces. We have a lot of former winners. We have some Hall of Famers. Brian Muehlhouse is in the tournament again this year. A lot of former. Mitch Ord is there as a 3 seed. A lot of BHS and BHSS and BHSN players, Edgewood players. So a good mixture, a good group in the men's division coming out. And then in the other two divisions, Gary Udaly took the medalist spot. Our defending champion, Matt Till, is not playing this year. And so Gary Udaly, who's obviously a familiar fixture in the senior championship and also a Hall of Famer, is in at the 1 seed. Jim Alexander, who's another former champion, was number 2 in qualifying. And then we get to the super senior, our defending champion, Rory Brown, is back to defend his title. And a name that is synonymous with the tournament, Ike Martin, is in there at the number 2 seed. And so we got a lot of familiar names, a lot of familiar people who are in this year in, year out, who love the competition, love the uniqueness of match play. So we're really gearing up for a great first weekend.
Chris Williams is our guest. He sits on the board, the city of Bloomington, the big golf tournament, the 95th edition. Match play and stroke play, interesting how all of those work. It's just not one weekend of 54 holes, 72 holes, 36 holes, whatever it's going to be. How was the participation into the men's championship flight? We know the seniors and super seniors, that's kind of the generation that's that plays every day around here. What was your championship flight turnout numbers like?
I don't have the specific numbers with me, but I think that the super senior and the senior divisions are, you know, we're kind of getting into that situation where those numbers are getting down a little bit lower than we want to. There is a lot more interest still in the men's championship. The biggest thing that we're hoping to continue to provide is outreach to get new players in. There's a few names here and there that you haven't seen for a couple of years, a few names that are unfamiliar to people, but we still have the same core group, and one thing that we as a board and as a committee of Hall of Fame members try to do is continue the outreach. It's something that we did with the scramble that we had in May, and it's also something that we're going to continue to aspire to do in the off season. And I know our partnership that we have with Cascades, and you mentioned this earlier, the leadership. There was a great article written in the HT yesterday by Jim Gordillo about that change, but it really wasn't a change in a lot of ways. You have three people very familiar to patrons of the course, kind of sliding into new roles: Jason Sims, Jackson Cowden, and Brad Scroggins. So they've been fantastic. They're 100% bought into what we want to do with the tournament, and they obviously are behind the scenes with it. They're the ones that are running the tee times. They're the ones on the first tee getting everything going. And so it's really something that we're just in a very much a supportive role. They're the ones that are really the heart and soul of what the tournament is about. And we're, on a personal level, someone who's known Jason Sims for over 20 years, I'm really happy to see him in that role.
Well, and Jason has a father that people in the sporting world know about around here. Gary Sims, obviously, the girls' basketball coach at Edgewood, so that's a familiar name. How important is it to have continuity there? I know everybody sometimes will say, hey, sometimes we just need a fresh face and some fresh ideas, but, you know, you've built the clubhouse. You've got all the fairways with zoysia grass. Is it important just to make sure the well-oiled machine is running properly?
I think in this case, when it's a no-brainer, absolutely. I think that it would have been a mistake, in my personal opinion, to not go in the direction that they did and keep the, if you look at what Jason and Jackson have done collectively, it's over 30 years at Cascades in a variety of roles. So Jason and I actually worked together in the pro shop way back in the mid-2000s. And so, you know, the fact that he's been able to be there, and he talked about that in that article, being in that role and that continuous phase has been a big deal. But I think if you are someone that has been out of Cascades recently, you can't help but appreciate the conditions. We noticed this earlier in the year when we played, or last month in Rick Shear's medalist tournament, the stroke play tournament. We couldn't get over how great a condition the course was in, especially the greens. I would not shy away from saying that the greens at Cades are as good as I've seen them in the last 30 years that I've played out there. So, I think people are going to be that are playing in the tournament are going to see that. I believe that we're going to have a good test out there. I think the pin positions are going to be in some great spots, and I think the greens are going to be rolling true and hopefully running a little slick, which is what you want in a tournament aspect.
Well, and speaking of the tournament setup, what pair of the three nines are being used for this time around?
Yeah, so we're going old school. We're going the original 18. So front nine built in 1928, or opened officially in 1928, back nine, or the pine in 1931. It's the one that's had the most history. It's had the most prestige in the tournament. But I wouldn't be surprised if we see a rotation down the road and utilizing the ridge nine. I personally think it's a great different test. It brings in a lot of different approaches to how you play the game, and so I would hopefully hope that we see that in the future. But obviously, people love the original 18. It's kind of like has the history, has the mystique to it. But yeah, that's where we're going with this year.
keeping up our Friday golf conversations as the summer rolls along. Chris Williams is our guest today. And taking a look at that article in the HD by our buddy Jim Gordillo, you know, we're going to have some changes. We got some tricks maybe up our sleeve or whatever. How influential is it from the public, these ideas? Is it from management and operations to make them more efficient? What changes, and I know you're not privy to any of this, would you like to see or you think they have in mind to make Cascade? What is the next step Cascades can take, I guess, is the longest-winded question in the history of talk radio.
Yeah, I mean, for someone who has been in the golf business before in a leadership role and in a behind the counter role and an assistant professional role, you know, you're going to have public input. You're going to have a lot of things that make sense. You're going to have some things that are beyond the scope of what's possible. But I know that Jackson and Jason have nothing but the best interests in mind for the course, and I know that they want to continue to see the improvements and make Cascades as good as it can be. And I think that the changes are going to be for the better. And I, you know, it's good for them to have ideas and kind of keep them under wraps. I know that, you know, Jason maybe mentioned something about potentially wanting to put Zoysia on all the tee boxes, which makes sense, but there could be some other things. And I think that a lot of the changes that you've seen have been subtle and you may not have even noticed it. And that's kind of the goal. And so I think you're always going to want to make improvements. And I think the great thing is when you have new people in, you have fresh ideas, you have fresh energy. And I think that all collectively, when you have people on board, it's going to work. And I think, you know, I think as someone who has spent a lot of time in my life out of that course, and it's something that's a course that's very important to me personally, I would be all for whatever changes they want to make that's going to make the course better.
Well, the biggest change was adding the Zoysia grass, and that went through seamlessly, which is great. Redoing the greens, that's how, 54 of them now? That's a big ticket item. Are those things even possible, or is it just mainly the cosmetics that go along with it, maybe getting different cart options or GPS or things like that?
Yeah, I think the cart stuff is something that comes up on a regular basis, which, you know, and you know, the GPS thing, I think with the technology that people have on their phones, I mean, you can, it's something that you don't see a lot of it. Even, you know, I played 36 holes on Monday at Otter Creek, and Otter Creek, you know, which I would consider to be one of the better courses in the state, in my opinion, and our old buddy Jimmy St. John's over there now, he used to be at the Sal. They don't have the major technology in the carts for the very reason of we have the GPS on our phones, we have the GPS on our devices. So I think, you know, and that's a good question. You know, the thing about the greens is they've largely been untouched.
They shrink, buddy. Infection. You know that.
Yeah. Well, and you know, but largely, you know, the whole, you know, the undulation and all that kind of stuff, you know, I personally would like to have those things left alone. I think that's one of the unique things about it is the smaller greens. And you know, they have been enlarged. You know, they're keeping an eye on the fringe sizes and all that kind of stuff. But I think it's something that is part of the mystique, because when you look at Cades and, you know, it's from its, you stretch it out as far as possible on the original 18, you maybe get 6,100 yards. But those tiny greens can wreak havoc. And I think that's one of the defenses to the course that needs to stay in place. But, you know,
excellent point.
I think for the casual golfer, you know, it's, and for even the person who's a diehard Cades person, or even the person who's just going out there for the city tournament, you want to go out there and you want to have a good experience on the course. And to your point about the Zoysia fairways, you know, there's, to me, when
that's
I'm
changed
driving,
the play. It sounds like I've talked to guys say I can't run it up there anymore. It sticks.
Yeah. I mean, you're not getting your 30 yards a roll on the old rye, you know, chickweed, bentgrass, or bluegrass mixture that you used to see. But I'll tell you what, there's nothing cooler than driving down Kinzer at dusk and seeing that green, that lime green, Irish green color of those fairways just stick out. It's a beautiful, beautiful thing, and that's a true testament to the people that have kept the course in such great shape.
Chris Williams is the voice you're hearing. We're talking about the 95th City Golf Tournament coming up this weekend, Mother Nature permitting. Well, we'll get as much in as we can. We'll worry about the rain delays when the rain delays possibly get here. Otter Creek, do you see who's going to redo Otter Creek?
Yeah, I saw the announcement about the Tom Kite design, so it'll be interesting to see what's going to happen there. I know they've been
any scuttlebutt when you were out there?
No, I you know, nothing groundbreaking. I know that the being below the floodplain has always been a troublesome thing for that course when 70-60% of it is can be underwater at times. But you know, I think that, you know, it's going to be something interesting. I hope that they don't take away the bones of it, because I love the Robert Trent Jones layout. I love the positioning of the bunkers, and I love the, you know, the uniqueness of some of those holes out there. Some great par fours, long par fours out there. But it'll be neat. I think it's needed. I think it's going to make a great course even better. And it's, you know, it's probably one of my top three courses to play that I enjoy playing in Indiana. So it's exciting.
They don't have 27 there, do they?
They do, yeah.
Okay.
So they have the original 18 that Robert Trent Jones Sr. Designed in 64. And then his son Reese, I think it was 93 or 94, did the East Course, which is a little bit different layout. It has some of the same, you know, Robert Trent Jones-esque characteristics, bunker placements, and blind, you know, you kind of don't see some of the features of the holes from the tee, but a lot of similar things. But yeah, it'll be interesting to see if what the overhaul is going to be out.
Well, it'll be interesting for a couple of questions, because it'll answer one of ours. Once we see the price tag of what Otter Creek is going to spend, we can kind of put that into, if we're thinking of dreaming and perhaps upgrading around here, that price tag will be very interesting. I'm not saying Tom Kite is going to be hired by the city, don't get me wrong, but if you're looking to redesign things or put things together, that would be very, very interesting. All right, let's get to the golf balls in the air. You gave me the Titleist and who's winning and who's doing, or who has won the qualifying results. We know all of that. Now that we get together, it is match play. And the seeding that goes out on this is 1 through 16, 2 through 15, just like a bracket. Any matches jump off the page to you to get things started tomorrow?
Yeah, I mean, I like the 8-9 match, Jacob Payne, the Bloomington South product, against Brian Muehlhaus, longtime North coach, now girls golf coach, Hall of Famer, longtime fixture in the tournament. I think that could be a really interesting match.
Now Muehlhaus has been playing. I saw he played at foul in the state amateur as well. So that he's just not rolling out of bed for this one.
That's right. That's right. He's getting serious for that. He'll be as serious as he can be with that. You know, the 413 is interesting. Chad Stout was a great player at Bloomington South. Is a fixture in this tournament, the 13th seed, and he's playing against Logan Vernon, you know, of the same Vernon dynasty in the state tournament, who plays St. Mary of the Woods, was a Bloomington North product. So I think those are going to be interesting in the seniors. You know, there's some interesting ones. I would say, you know, the 5-12, Timmy Gillespie, that's Troy's older brother, against Dan Smith, that's a good one. Anything can happen. I mean, I remember one year in the state tournament, the men's, the top three seeds, including, I think I was a 2 seed that year, we all got beat. So anything can happen. So 16-1 is not unheard of.
Well, and that's the beauty of match play, isn't it? Because you can have a quadruple, quintuple, five putt, whatever. It's one hole. That's it.
Yeah, and that's, you know, there are people that loathe that, and there are people that love it. And at the end of the day, you're playing against one person, and you have to have a strategy. You have to play, you know, 18 pars could very well win you a match, but you could also, you know, have five pars in and be down five, which is a very distinct possibility. Super senior, we got some, and the thing is now, you know, in this day and age, a lot of our veteran players that have been fixtures in the tournament for so long are now in the super seniors. And so that's hard to believe for a lot of us who have been around these people for so long. But I think the best matchup in the super senior is the 5-12, and that's Bob Hastie and Mike Vernon. And these two guys have known each other since they were kids. They are both in the Hall of Fame. They are both fixtures. I don't think Mike Vernon has missed the city tournament in 50 years. It's something unheard of like that. So I'm kind of circling that one personally. And I consider that to be a very good match. I think that, you know, Bob Hastie is a very close friend of mine. So,
is he the big Cardinals fan?
I don't know.
No, then he wouldn't be. I'm getting him confused with somebody else then.
That's okay.
You would know if he's a big
Cardinals
fan.
Yes, yes. But, you know, there's some other good ones. Ike is a 2 seed playing Fred Cooksey. Fred Cooksey's played in this tournament for years and years and years. So, again, you know, a lot of these guys are friends. A lot of these guys are golf buddies. But the great thing is that when you get them into match play situation, it's just it's a whole different element that I think is unmatched. And I know that there's the criticism about the fact that the tournament is long, and if you look around across golf, the world of golf, match play is almost to the point of non-existence, but it's a unique aspect of how to approach golf.
Well, and the other part of it, it's still used in the Ryder Cup. It's still used in, like, the
Absolutely.
U.S. Amateur and
President's Cup.
President's Absolutely. Cup, there you go. I mean, and those are some of the biggest
– Yeah.
You get some of the biggest eyeballs on there. It's different. It makes it interesting. 95 years suggest it's working just fine. Yep. And to let people know, the seniors start at 50. What year did the super seniors start?
Oh, gosh.
Is it 65 or 62?
60. I think it's 65.
Okay, that's a nice round, rounded off number. So.
I could be wrong because I know it's usually the gold tees in a lot of tournaments start at 62 or scrambles at 62.
Sure.
I want to say it's 65.
Well, that's where I got confused. So that's where I wanted to make it.
Yeah.
Now, before I let you go, and you've done a great job. Chris Williams is the voice we hear, and we can keep him all afternoon if we'd like, if he's not too busy with us. You have a junior flight this year. That's exciting because last year, I know that was one of your goals after not having anyone in the junior flight. Why are they back? How'd they get back? And hopefully we can grow this moving forward as well.
Yeah, the minimum number for a flight is four, and we're at four right now. And I think a lot of this was done by the kids themselves, just kind of pushing for their buddies to play and pushing for, our good friend John Decker. I know his son Ryan, who is heck of a golfer at his age, going into seventh grade, was instrumental in getting, the four. And a lot of people say, well, it's only four. Well, we haven't had a junior tournament for a couple years. And, the fact is that, I know people don't like to hear this kind of stuff, but, back in my day. But when I was in high school, we had three or four different flights.
Right.
And the junior – and so it's a fact of – we have stuff going on in the summer. Kids have different interests. The better players are playing in AJGA tournaments or they're playing in IGA tournaments. And I get all that. But the fact is that you have a group of kids, and these are all kids that are, to my knowledge, are not even in high school yet, which is great. So they're younger, and they're going to be playing next weekend on the 15th. And so they'll be playing a match Saturday, and then the finals will be on Sunday. So for it being four, I totally, we would want it to be 8, 12, or 8, 16, whatever. But the fact that we can say we have an Eddie Lawson, which is, the longtime pro, that's what the flight championship is named after. The fact that we're going to have an Eddie Lawson champion this year is a great thing. We're super happy about that. It's something that we hope will grow. And again, the longevity of the tournament depends on the younger players coming out to play. So we're really happy to see that.
Now, the longevity of the tournament, the 95th edition of the Bloomington City Golf Tournament, obviously has roots backwards. We're looking to plant roots to go forward to obviously hit the 100-year mark as well. I won't worry about the 100-year mark. You and I have too many young kids to worry about 5 years from now in college and driving licenses to worry about golf tournaments. But each year, the Hall of Fame committee does induct people into the Hall of Fame. I know you're not going to announce that on this program at this moment, but give us a little teaser of how many are in the class of 2023. We know the Monroe County Sports Hall of Fame, they will induct 1 week from tonight. That's exciting around this time of year, and so is adding to the City of Bloomington Golf Hall of Fame as well.
Yeah, so we have one inductee this year. This individual, I would say, is more than deserving based on their pedigree and based on their credentials and their resume. And so this was a pretty easy decision collectively in a voting process by the members. So we're really happy that, this person is in. It's like I said, it's a well-deserved induction. I don't think there would be any question marks or second guessing this. So you'll start to see some information come out next week. So if we chat next week, I can give you a little more details on it, and then we'll have on Sunday the 16th when we do the award ceremony after the conclusion of the rounds. We will have a brief ceremony where we induct this individual to be part of our little cohort. So we're pretty excited about it.
Now, do you have a nomination process? Do you guys just gather around the table? Do you have a vote?
Yeah.
How this goes?
Good question.
Well, let the people in. Right. Tell us how the sausage is made.
So we kind of look at qualifications, and we want to look at people that have contributed in the state tournament in terms of, you know, and I think the main aspect would be their playing ability and their player involvement. And so, but we look at credentials and we look at resumes, and we kind of compile a list of people, and then we send it out among the Hall of Fame members that are here in Bloomington and throughout the country. And we basically have a voting process, and then we kind of make a determination based on a group of however many we have in our core group here in Bloomington, and we go by the number of votes. So it's a very democratic process. It's nothing that, you know, it can't be, you know, it's a basic process, but we want to make sure that if we have a member that's not in Indiana that still wants to be connected to how we do the process, they can still vote. So we came to this conclusion, I would think, in a very fair process, and it was the best decision that we could make based on qualifications.
And Chris, if people want to see the past members, where in the new clubhouse can they look to see who has been inducted previously?
Yeah, so we have Cascades was very gracious and put up the Hall of Fame plaques with pictures and name and the names on there in the pro shop area, and we are continuously updating that to make sure that we have everything up to speed. But we also, you know, and we have. You know, if people just search online history of Cascades Golf Course, they'll come up to the website that I created. The URL is way too long to say, but it's something that has history of the tournament, but also history of Cascades. It talks about, you know, the starting of the, and this is a good trivia question. I think I've asked you this before, but do you know who did the layout for the original 18 for Cascades?
You ask me this every year, and every year I get it wrong, and I kick myself for not getting it right. It is the original layout for Cascades.
I'll give you a hint. He also designed Medina, and he also designed the Atlanta Athletic Club and East Lakes. Bobby Jones' home course.
It's not Bobby Jones, but I can see the name on on the sheet, and I give me his initials.
TB.
Tom Bendelo.
There you go.
See, I always know it, but I have to. I got to dig through that. Tom Doak all day today. I'm getting ready for the Scottish Open next week in the Renaissance Club. I didn't know Tom Doak designed only for resorts, not for championship golf. That's very
interesting.
That's what I learned that today. But Tom Bendelo, fantastic designer, and that story of how he came here to do that is very interesting as well.
Yeah, it's. He worked with a landscape architect named A.W. Brayton in Indianapolis, and Bendelo was based out of Chicago, and he did the layout. He staked out exactly where to put these. So, you know, the unfortunate thing is that Cascades is not listed on the official list of courses that he was designed, but we have ample evidence that he definitely had his fingers all across the former field that was a farm that became Cascades Golf Course or the municipal golf course. So
anytime you can be mentioned with Bobby Jones and Eastlake and Medina and the Atlanta Athletic Club?
I believe Atlanta Athletic Club as well,
That's where David Toms won the PGA Championship, I know that.
There you go. So this
is a big deal, and that's what makes this history proud. This is why we talk to you every June and July as well. All right, come back next week. I don't want to be a naysayer here, and I'm going to look at the forecast in Bloomington hourly, and it's okay.
It doesn't rain during the city tournament, Glass. It just doesn't do
it. It always rains during the Memorial for some reason, so
that's
we know that. But tomorrow, I'm not worried about the rain. We're going to play in rain, but when I look tomorrow on the hourly, it's scattered thunderstorms, and if that's thunderstorms, that means lightning, and that's just not a safety issue we want to get into.
Yeah, it'll be interesting. I think the last tee time tomorrow is 10:30, so they're starting early, 7:30. Hopefully they'll get it. You know, and about match play is you know, if somebody wins 5 and 4, you can stop. Granted, it'll be the furthest point in the golf course. Or, there's nothing like a 6 and 5 victory or loss when you're standing on 13 green up off North Kensler and you realize, oh, yeah, I'm on the farthest point from the golf course and you have to walk back. But, you know, it is what it is.
Scattered thunderstorms are in the forecast all day, and it's better than 50% all day tomorrow. And let's just get lucky. The great news, plenty of daylight. We can stretch this out, so that's great. When are you coming back next week? If we're going to be done with everything Sunday afternoon, so we will find a day early next week. We'll get together. You can get me through all the results and set the stage for the big induction ceremony next weekend, the championships of all of the flights, the championships of the Phil Talbot, the Paul Gray. What's the super seniors? Who are they named for? Anybody yet?
Their name for Ross Rush, who was a longtime fixture out of Cascade.
Perfect. I didn't have that one on my list, so that's why we get educated. What ball diamonds are you going to be washed out at tomorrow?
None.
Whoa.
Our baseball season's over.
Look at you.
Yeah, we have not plunged into the travel ball experience yet. So we're getting close, but we thankfully still have most of our July weekends open, so we are
You educators have to, because if I'm counting down the days correctly, 26, 25, and it's less if you just count the days of the week and not the weekends either.
Once the fourth hits, it's
done.
The countdown's on.
People laugh at me when I say it on this show. I say you summer ends July 4th weekend. This is it. This is the last weekend.
I'm sitting there on college. On the east side of college, right across from the Woodburn House, nice shady spot for the parade. And I'm thinking to myself, boy, this is great. And then it caught up to me. I'm like, oh yeah, summer's pretty much over and school's about to start. And I was just kind of in a bad mood for the next hour, so I didn't really get to enjoy the parade. It was all my own doing, but still, you know, it makes you think.
But your spidey senses are correct. Labor Day used to be the farewell to summer, and Labor Day is now, hey man, we're 8 weeks into school. It's nice for a little break.
That's right.
Fix exactly this. Right. Whoever came up with this 180 days of – where did you get that number? What's wrong with 160? What's wrong?
I used to think August 24th was starting early.
Oh.
And I was in elementary school, and, you know, so it is what it is.
I agree. I just think there could be a happier medium. But when everybody wants 100 vacation days a year, this is what happens. You want a week at Thanksgiving?
I don't complain about getting out before Memorial Day, though. I do not complain about that.
That's
pretty nice.
Yeah. But now with all the electronic advances we have, do we need to be in school all of those times? Can we go a week to start? I don't know either. Though they didn't ask me. We'll talk more golf when we get back. And next week, the Scottish Open, as we mentioned, will be the Genesis Scottish Open at the Renaissance Club. That's a week before the Open Championship at Hoylake. Yep. It returns to Royal Liverpool. So you and I got plenty of golf to get to here in the next couple weeks. Thanks for your time, buddy. And it's always appreciated.
You are welcome, sir. I'll talk to you later. Take care.
That's my buddy Chris Williams. We hope you enjoyed the program this afternoon. The Reds return to the radio tonight. They will take on the Brewers. 8:10 is first pitch, as you know, so that means Tommy Thrall's pregame is at 7:40. We'll have the Reds and Brewers for you tonight and on Sunday afternoon as well. Eat, Drink, Smoke with Tony Katz is our featured programming on Saturday. Have a wonderful, wonderful back half of your 4th of July weekend. Let's do a little rain dance to hope Mother Nature can stay away tomorrow, at least for a few hours at a time, so we can get outside and have some fun and do all that. Big thanks to Chris Williams, Rod Holloway as well, and as always to Diane Daly for her news headlines. The Crazy Horse Tavern Happy Hour here on a Big Show Friday. Yeah, it's over.